Well, Jackie Road is just a place where we can have some fun. Well, I'm having fun at Jackie Road, doing cool interviews and writing songs.
Hey, this is Jack Post, and you're listening to Jackie Road Studios, a podcast where I sit down with a guest and use something from our interview to inspire a new song, which I write and record, and you can hear it at the end of the episode. So today's guest is Hamish Blake, and there is a brand new song at the end of this episode inspired by something in my chat with Hamish. I feel like I hardly need to give Hamish an introduction, and if you're listening to Jackie Road Studios, then you've either come here, I guess, from the Christian O'Connell Show or Hamish and Andy. I feel like a lot of people who listen to this show are familiar with Hamish and Andy, so it feels kind of pointless to do a big backstory about him and tell you who he is. You probably know who he is. If you are one of the very, very few low percentage people who don't, well, this week you just have to go to Wikipedia and do the intro for yourself. Because I talked for Hamish for so long, I'm just going to jump right into it. But thank you for everybody who listened to the show. JackieRoadStudios@gmail.com is where you can email me for anything. Of course, we're at the end of this series, for new listeners, we're giving away the world's fastest guitar, the Yamaha RS720B. So just by being a listener of this podcast, all you have to do is send me an email if you get read out on the show. You go into like this mini pool of not that many people, maybe 30 people, 35 people, 40 people. I haven't checked how many people are in the raffle ticket pool yet, but there's a very real chance you can win a $1,500 guitar that Yamaha just sent the show. So JackieRoadStudios@gmail.com, send me an email there. But let's move on to this week's guest, Hamish Blake. I didn't ask him to bring in an intro song. If you didn't hear from Lewis Spears' episode, we've canned the intro song. The intro song is gone. And I was going to make some music. I forgot. Just as I'm saying this now, I realize I was going to make some music as like to intro the guests, but I haven't done it. So I'll just play the opener again.
Well, Jackie Road is just a place where we can have some fun. Well, I'm having fun at Jackie Road, doing cool interviews and writing songs.
Hamish Blake joins me as the latest guest in Jackie Road Studios. Hamish, how are you going?
Very good, Jackie. Now, actually, I don't know if I've ever called you Jackie before in my life, but I guess the name's working.
Well, I'm not actually sadly, I'm not in Jackie Road Studios anymore. I spent about 3 weeks in there, and then we got kicked out of our house, and now I'm in an Airbnb. So Jackie Road Studios is on the road. It's only a name now.
But it's a cool name. And that's why, is this a bit where I pick my intro music?
Oh, I scrapped the intro music because...
I'll be honest, I haven't listened to the last few episodes, but we're not doing intro music anymore because I was like, don't I have to give you that in advance?
I scrapped that last week with Lewis Spears because I was putting the full interviews on YouTube, then YouTube didn't like the copyright, so I had to take out the music.
I'm annoyed that I'm the first, well, I guess I'm like two into the new regime because I wanted to pick Penny Lane by the Beatles for that exact reason.
Oh,
because the Jackie Road song sounds a bit like Penny Lane. And
it's heavily inspired, but still copyright then, fair.
True, but then I was like, then if we have a Beatles song as the intro and the Beatles lawyers find it, they'll start unpicking this and be like, what's this? What is this podcast? Jackie Road sounds like Abbey Road. They're like, hang on a sec. The guy's intro is Abbey Penny Lane.
The album artwork is exactly the Abbey Road artwork. Yeah, that's actually, now I think about it, there's lawsuits all over the place with this. The music's the least of my worries.
Yeah, my goal was to make my intro music a honey trap for the Beatles lawyers to come and find.
No, now people can only choose intro songs if they're royalty-free music off some kind of CD that they send to radio stations.
Yeah, you know what my favorite intro song is? Yeah, Deep Brooding 9. I saw it once on CSI and I just thought it was cool music, you know?
Now, the podcast is getting, every week it veers further and further from a music-based podcast. I think with Lewis's episode, I think we talked about hip-hop for maybe a minute of the 50 minutes I had him on, but if you want music-based questions, Hamish Blake, top 10 punk bands and why?
Okay, no FX, just crazy. Against Me, probably Probably their number 1 to 9. And not just because I only know Two Bone Pants, but because I think for any againsties out there, like any Against Me fans, they would know that when those boys and or girls step up to the mic and they just let rip against the establishment, against rules, against people wanting other people to do stuff like, you know, their way, the againsties just really talked to us as a generation, didn't they? I mean, are you into punk?
You know, my favorite bands haven't changed for 15 years. NoFX, Against Me, Green Day, they're all still my favorite bands.
You still got that cool NoFX jumper?
I don't know where that is. It's probably somewhere kept so safe that...
That's like a $180 jumper.
Well, for people who don't know, which is everybody except for you and me.
Everybody except us two.
You, for one, Chris Kringle, for what is that, the Radio Karate team who makes the TV shows, the Gap Year TV shows. You got me and Chris Kringle, and you knitted me, or you sewed me personalized.
Knitted is generous, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was definitely hours put into it. You knitted me a NoFX jumper.
I made you I put my heart and soul into it. It took me hours. I made you a light blue NoFX jumper.
Was it a hoodie?
Like merch. It was a hoodie. That was the hardest bit because knowing nothing about sewing, I mean, it looked like this too. It wasn't like I pulled it off against all the odds. I gave you something that you could, I suppose if you had to pick the closest noun that it was similar to, you would pick, okay, jumper. It's a bit like a jumper. But I went to Spotlight and I bought very, very premium material and I got a few square meters of it. Thank you. And I lay down on it and my housemate at the time traced around me and just traced my torso and arms. We just did that twice and then I sewed those two bits together. And then cut out and ironed on some NoFX stuff on the front. But then I did the separate hood as well and I sewed that together. And the last time I sewed was probably like when you, in year 9, you do like textiles for a week or whatever and you make a cushion.
Yeah.
And I think that was the last time I remember sewing. So
did you sew with a machine or did you sew with a needle and thread?
No, handmade.
That would have, it would have been at least 2 hours in that.
Honestly, Jake, before I did that thing where I make my kids' birthday cakes, that was the last time I'd stayed up all night working on a project for somebody that I cared about.
I have to dig that up. It's definitely somewhere. I wouldn't be so careless as to throw something away like that. I'll try to find... I remember we took photos of it, so I'll try to find a photo to share of my cherished NoFX.
Yeah, awesome. It gave me... It was just one of those great things that gave me so much joy knowing how shit it was. Like going the more, and that's when the lady was like, "Well, if you're gonna, so you know, you need these needles and these thread, that's gonna be like another $45." And I was like, "I found it so much fun that it was such bad value. This jumper, like, so expensive to because I had to buy. This is probably why companies, you know, have factories where they make many jumpers because the costs of making them can be reduced across many jumpers. But I was a one jumper factory and I just remember pissing myself all night just going, this is the best worst thing I've ever made. And
anything you make by hand, you've got to have all the stuff at your house already or it's not financially worth it.
It's why Uber Eats is all actually a more economical way of eating because when you're like, no, that's it, I'm going to cook, I'm going to make a slow roasted lamb shoulder, and you're like, okay, well, I need to buy all the spices from scratch, all the herbs from scratch, probably a new pan because you don't have one of those. So, you know, making your own food usually costs about $150 a meal. I don't know what Curtis Stone's talking about.
But Christian and I, like you do, not as extravagantly as you make your kids' birthday cakes, but Christian and I, for the radio show, made the Women's Weekly birthday cake.
I know, loved it.
Going out to buy the ingredients for that cost me $65. For the worst cake I've ever tasted.
You should just go and get like, just go down to like St Kilda to one of those bespoke bakeries and you could get probably the best cheesecake in Australia, probably for about $60.
You can, the only you more you'd like, spend on a cake is a wedding cake.
Which are also terrible value. Terrible value. Because they're not tasty. They're just big and like elaborate. And then there's also like the wedding tax on top of it. But you're right. Like, when I make the cakes for my kids, I mean, there are some cost-saving corners that I cut, I suppose. Like, I don't need to prove that I can bake a cake. So I usually just buy the cake from a baker and I go, you know, I need like five. And also by the time I put the order in for the cake, which they need like a week out, I haven't really thought through in my head how I'm going to make the cake.
So you just get extra. You know,
so I'm just like, I don't know, I'll need three kind of ones like this big. And then they go, okay, that's a lot. How many people at the party? Like, oh, no, just us, just family. I'm not really thinking about that. I approach it like as a sculpture challenge. And then...
Yeah, I'm start like, well, with a big chunk of wood, like a whole tree to carve down into whatever you need it to be.
Michelangelo, how much do you need for the David? I don't know, like a mountain worth of marble? And I'll just chip away till I'm happy. And so most of the night is me shaving bits off, trying to make this shape out of the cake and just eating cake as I go. So I probably eat at least half a cake while I'm doing it. And then I drink a little bit too. But there's also like the I learned from the first year, There's an icing called fondant, which is on like wedding cakes and stuff. It's that smooth icing you see, or anytime they make a cake. Like, remember the Ronda Rousey cake we had made on the radio show?
I would describe it as icing that tastes shit, but is really good for looking smooth and crisp on the cake.
It gives you like you can like recreate real things with fondant. We made We did a thing for Ronda Rousey, didn't we? Did we get me and Andy made up out of cake, like our heads made, because we wanted to see Ronda Rousey punch our heads and then she wouldn't do it because there was...
there was a
skewer inside and she's like, if I damage my hand before the fight, I've lost like $100 million or something. And we were like, we can take the skewer out.
That's
and
then right.
She's like, no, I'm not going to punch the cake.
It was the day before didn't Eddie Had Stadium fight become the biggest watched UFC fight in history? Or the most biggest massive. Attendance? It would have been so funny if she sprained her wrist punching a cake with your face on it. Cake.
So anyway, that's what fondant is. And so now when I make one of those cakes, I say to on the phone to the baker going, okay, so I'm vibing. It's going to be like this color, so I need... I get some little bit of black fondant, like, but then like a tennis ball size of red fondant, and then quite a lot of, you know, butter icing. And then when I'm telling them, like, you know, this year I made for my son the Cave of Wonders out of Aladdin, which is essentially just a big purple tiger's head.
Amazing.
And I'm because I haven't even planned. I don't really plan it till the day. I mean, like, my brain won't work until the day, so it's not like I'm trying to be cool. I just can't think until it's time. I basically can't think of an idea until it's. It was due 2 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And then something unlocks in my brain. I wish I could access that early, but I just can't. So they're on the phone going, and how are you going to do it? And what about the teeth? And how are you going to make the cake stand up? And like, I don't know. I'll sort of cross that bridge when I come to it. But I imagine, you know, they're like, how big will it be? I said, about the size of a human head. And they're like, and because these people bake every day and they're like professional cake makers. Every time, and because I've used a few different bakeries over the years, every time I'm getting all the supplies in for the cake, they're always like, would you like us to make the cake? No, that's not necessary. And they're like, it will be about the same price. Like, no, that's okay. I enjoy making the cake. They're like, this will take a long time. Like, you know, they're like, it might be easier for us to just do it as we're, you know, rather than just getting all the ingredients together, we could just do it. Like, no, that's fine.
The other thing for you would be like the hassle of the cleanup, because I mean, you're used to over the years doing so much radio stunts and TV stunts where luckily you have somebody else who you can make a big mess as you want, but somebody else comes in and cleans it up. With the cake.
So true.
It's such a mess. Like there was a dust of icing sugar all over the kitchen. There was like 100 bowls used to mix stuff. It was just a nightmare.
And then it's all the improvising of going, uh-oh, I need a knife now, and then I'm going to dip it in hot water to do something with it. And then that just takes up like half the bench, and then it's like stained red, then the bench is red.
Yeah.
And then you have moments where you go, I'm not working with red anymore, and then you just sweep that all like off the bench onto the floor. Yeah, it's insane. And that the mess is insane, and I didn't bake the cake, and I didn't make any of the icing. Like the kitchen just gets destroyed. I was very impressed with your cakes, by the way. I was very impressed with your cake.
Christian did the rocket. For anyone who knows the Women's Weekly book, the rocket is like, it looks like the hardest one because it's on It's on legs, essentially, and a cylinder that's pointing up to the sky like a rocket.
Structurally,
and he's never
so
baked.
Dumb.
And you and I know how reckless he is with, like, cooking anyway from our... We've got a group about the air fryer, the three of us, and I haven't told you this yet, though. You know about, because he spoke about it on the show and told you, when you gave us a recipe for buttermilk chicken, fried chicken, you're meant to go and get buttermilk, which is right next to the milk in Coles and Woolworths and any supermarket, but he got buttermilk pancakes mixed.
He was under the impression that it was some sort of, like, very elitist ingredient, like, if you... Like if you ordered an almond milk latte in the '80s, that's the way he views buttermilk these days. Like, oh my god, like it was like caviar or something.
Yeah,
but we're like, no, because I think it's just, isn't it just milk with a bit of like vinegar or something in it? Like, it's just a slightly different kind of milk.
True, I'd never tried to buy it before, but you're right. It's, if you look at the normal milk in the aisle, it's with the normal milk and it's right next to it.
And it's right next to it.
There's different brands to choose from, so it's not like it's hidden and hard to find. So he bought the buttermilk pancake mix and tried to make the chicken, and it was, no one liked it in his family. He had to go back out and make it again. That was maybe a month ago.
Pancake mix.
That was a month ago. Last week, he bought buttermilk pancake mix again to make the chicken and took it and got it home. And his daughter told him, you've made this mistake before. And he'd forgotten about, we talked about it on the show. It was disgusting enough for his whole family to send him back to the supermarket. He forgot. He bought the buttermilk.
He forgot that he made that mistake?
Dude, his recklessness, Christian's recklessness outside of the show is sky high. I feel like he's got the mental energy to put all this effort into 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. because we've talked about it many times.
I mean, he gives his all to the show. I love the show. I love what you guys do on the show. But yeah, it's like he's running a marathon every morning for the rest of the day. He's just wrapped in a space blanket and he's like delirious, like sucking on electrolytes and trying to regain consciousness. That is wild.
He's got a 13-year-old daughter and a 15-year-old daughter, a 16-year-old daughter, and they've already, like, think of the man in the space blanket after the show. That is his parenting style now. Is just like they run rings around him. And he'll come to work the next day and he's like, oh, yeah, I let them paint their room black yesterday. I was like, why'd you do that? And he's like, yeah, I guess at the time they had some convincing arguments, but now I can't really remember what it was. They sort of outsmarted him, sadly.
Yeah, they're like dodgy paramedics, and of course never in Australia, but dodgy paramedics at the end of the race, wrapping in the space blanket, like stealing his watch, like taking his wallet. Right this way, sir. Yeah. Sign here. This is the hospital release. Good. Yeah. So you won't
or
need these heavy...
drive him back to his house and put him up in his bed and just take things from around the home.
Just sedate him and take all his electronics.
But he's really having, like, I mean, sometimes, you know, people with young kids like yourself can make parenting sound scary with, like, how much it's, like, how out of control it can get, but... I think having teenage daughters
I look at Christian. I look at Christian, and I feel a bit terrified because my daughter terrifies me at the moment. But she's so cute while she does it that I am able to convince myself that by the time the teenage years roll around, we'll have built up a rapport where there will never be a situation where I'm terrified by how little control I have over protecting this thing that means the world to me. So, yeah, it's funny. You, me, and Christian, we're all at like an interesting points along the spectrum. Mm. You're somebody that may very well have kids one day and would, you know, be terrific at it. So you're sort of looking at me going, oh, okay, that's what it looks like a few years down the track.
Yeah,
and I'm looking up at Christian going, okay, that's what it looks like a few years down the track. And all of the silly cuteness has gone. And it's...
Yeah. And this is a huge generalization, but it's true, like with Christian daughters and how they clash with him at the moment. And I'm sure they have many lovely times as well. And every time I've met them, they've been completely lovely. But is there a thing with teenage girls? Because I've got two brothers, but my sister and my mum clashed heads like all through her teenage years, whereas none of us brothers really did.
Yeah, interesting question. I mean, you definitely notice... Like you said, you know, it's kid to kid, but you do definitely know some funny differences that I think are so common you'd be forgiven for generalizing them between like little boys and little girls. Just the, you know, like, even all I've really got to operate is off my kids, but I look at Sonny and, like, you know, little boys are pretty logical. Like, it's pretty, like, cause and effect. You can draw a clear line between cause and effect.
Sure.
And as a guy myself, that helps because I think that's how guys think a lot of the time. We're like, problem, solution, cause, effect, got it, the world makes sense. With my daughter, I have such a, like, there is no clear line here between cause and effect that I can see. I don't know what is going on here. Like, just the ability to have a meltdown over something that you are having to hide your face because you're laughing because they're like, you know, the world is ending because, like, I don't have a witch's outfit. Yeah, you do, honey. Come on, put this black top on it. That's a witch's top. That witches don't wear t-shirts. I think they do.
They do too. Well, look, maybe not on big outings when they're doing the cauldron stuff, but definitely at home.
But I think just, yeah, collecting ingredients on a hot day, they would still wear the uniform, but just maybe not all the cloaks and stuff. Like, yeah, they do. They don't wear pants. Yeah, these are cool witches' pants. There's no such thing as witches' pants. And stuff. Like, I need to be a witch. And you're like, it's not Halloween. I don't know why you need to be a witch. We haven't watched anything to do with a witch, but right now being a witch is everything. And I'm trying to help you navigate that and try and find creative solutions. So there is a time to be like, oh, this is just out of control. But then also she needs to be so happy out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Well, you're like, all right, well, I'll take it. But she's just like, once they come in and go, Dad, you're my best friend. This is great. This is a really lovely day. I'm like, okay. All right. Well, I'll take that as well. But so you're
but
really on
you
your toes.
There's nothing you can do to go like, all right, what can I replicate
of
today?
Exactly. I cannot bottle what just happened and repeat that. That's the scary part. So you're just like, I don't know what's causing you to be upset and I don't know what causes you to be happy. And so that's the crazy thing. You're just pulling on all these levers and you don't know if any of them are doing anything really. Like, it's like when we got to, you know, you get to go and we set in a replica of the space shuttle when we visited NASA and you're allowed to press the buttons. You're like, I don't, you know, you don't really know what's going on. Like, if any of these do anything or
we're not really flying, like, to the moon, are we, guys?
No, you know, and you can't, one time you press it, something beeps and then it won't beep again when you press it. So, yeah, it's just that flying the Rudy spaceship is just very confusing, but that's what makes it so much fun. Like, you know, that gives it its. I love that it's such a different adventure having the next kid. Not, I wasn't really expecting it to be exactly the same, but I sort of love that it's so different because you. I don't know. I think I guess it's just, you know, you go through life thinking that you know, doing that thing. You're like, well, now I've seen it all, and so, like, before I had kids, I remember going, well, I kind of feel like I think I've seen most things, so I'd be surprised if this kid could bring along an emotion in me that I haven't experienced. And I remember thinking our cat was really cute, you know, and we do have a fairly cute cat, but we really spent a lot more time invested in the cuteness of the cat, I think it's fair to say, before kids came along. I remember patting the cat whilst I was pregnant, quietly thinking to myself, like, the cat is so cute. Like, I doubt that this thing that's coming along will beat the cat for cuteness.
Definitely. And I mean, I feel like that about our dog at the moment because we don't have kids.
Yeah,
I look at her and go, I just don't think I would become one of those families that the dog becomes second tier to the children because I love you so much.
Yeah, and you're probably looking at Luna going, I love you so much. I can't imagine that some kid, because before you have kids, you're like, oh, those things that you see at family functions or at the park, like some, whose parents just don't seem to notice that they've got two double barrels of snot coming out their nose and it's the grossest thing you've ever seen. And you're like, one of those things coming along and disrupting Luna to you would seem ludicrous.
Can I tell you a sentence that you actually said to me before you had Sonny? I think it was like, it must have been why Zoe was pregnant. But we were out to dinner with you and Bianca and you were with Zoe and you said, our idea for this kid is going to be, it's joining our party. I'm going to butcher the quote, but something is along the lines of the child will be joining our party. We're not going to change our life for them. Do you still stand by that quote?
Oh, shit. Whoa. Just how gorgeous. What a gorgeous thought. I guess you just have, like, evolutionarily speaking, you have to think like that. It's helpful to think like that going into it, because that's the thing, because until you just don't know what you don't know, and you don't, but in a good way too, like, you cannot imagine the feeling before you've had it.
Mm.
And then once you've had it, everything goes out the window and it all makes sense, and suddenly you understand why people would, you know, immediately die for their children and do anything for their kids, and because it's just something clicks in you and you get it.
Yeah.
But you have to feel it to get it. But before you've had the kid, yeah, it's all academic. So I definitely was just like I said, I was like, I can't imagine something coming along that'd be able to call the shots, really. We're having a good time and that kid's just, he's coming with us.
I like my schedule, my routine at the moment. I don't think much is going to change from that.
Yeah, and I remember saying that too. I think I said something along the lines of, look, obviously we're going to grant this kid an access all areas pass, you know, to the lifestyle. They can come to everything and they can do whatever they want, but we'll be really living life on our terms. And then you realize that that would work if that was a work experience kid or an intern. You could dictate that too. But when it's someone that comes along that goes, I don't care, in the nicest possible way, this baby comes along and she goes, I don't care what you guys are doing. I can't even be bothered hearing you explain it for me to tell you that I don't care. I'm doing whatever I want to do. I will die if you don't look after me, and I'm not interested in meeting you halfway at all, ever, on anything. You just come to me, and that's what babies are. They're like, I'm not meeting you halfway.
They don't even know the concept of meeting you halfway. Yeah.
And you're so, because until that point, you've lived at least long enough in the adult world that all your negotiations are with good people who at least understand the concept of a compromise or meeting you halfway. And that's so when we said that to you, that was two people that had forgotten that there was any such reality where you could be negotiating verbally or otherwise with someone who didn't understand the concept of compromise, let alone would ever not give you one. So
it's like beginner's luck in poker. It's like they're going all in on hands that are ridiculous. You would never go all in on that. But because they don't know the concepts of anything, it's like
they're an erratic player. They're like, well, why did that guy go all in on that? Because that's just the cards that gave him the win. There was no play to it. Yeah. So it's, and then it's just like, even once they can start talking, like still with my daughter, the negotiating is wild because they are never going to go, you're like, Rudy, you know, please stop screaming. Like, you just got to stop screaming today. And you go, no. And you'll go, I actually don't have much else I can do. Because she's never going to look at you and go, fair enough, Dad. I know you had a long day. Sorry, Matt. I was just kind of mucking around. And so you'll be like, you know, she'll come to you at like, but also the audacity too of the negotiating is insane. It's like you would never, even if, so let's say that, you know, Bianca was in charge of all the treats in the house and you loved them. You loved getting treats and snacks, but you couldn't have any yourself. But you would also know, historically, a treat is a rare thing, and maybe it's an evening thing. It wouldn't even occur to you at 6:30 in the morning to ask for a marshmallow as an opening position. As an opening position in a house where you maybe get two or three marshmallows a week, and they're always kind of after lunch. You'd be like, it'd be like going to a car dealership and going, well, I start the bidding at $1.
Yeah.
You'd be like, well, I'm walking. Yeah. You'd be like, I'm not going to do that to this guy because he knows you look like a jerk and you're wasting everyone's time. But kids don't think like that. Like Rudy, yesterday morning, like at 6:30, she's like, I feel like a bit of a snacko. Like, honey, we don't get up till 7 o'clock. The sun's not on. Got a little clock with the sun that comes on it. Like, so, A, you shouldn't even be up yet, let alone talking about snackos. And no marshmallow, like no to all of this, but she's like, I want a marshmallow, maybe a little marshmallow, like, honey.
Yeah.
No, no,
it's
no.
It's so hard when something so cute is asking you as well, I imagine.
I know, and that's the tricky thing. And then if you were like, okay, you can have a marshmallow, let's talk about after lunch. Maybe a marshmallow this afternoon. What about two marshmallows? You go, mate, come on. Just so she'll never accept. Like, obviously, I'm in that scenario, I just went through a lot of pain and then managed to get some porridge in her mouth and then she forgot about the marshmallow. But the if I went, like, let's say this has happened before. Mm. Early in the morning, she's melting down. Like, you know, let's say we're down the milk bar near our house getting picking up some milk because we forgot or whatever, and I'm getting a coffee. And maybe, I think there was once where I just went, you know what, daddy, daughter, let's live, have a baby chino with a marshmallow. From then on in, it's expected. Yeah, it was. Yeah. There is no, like, I
this
understand
this is the place where we get the marshmallows.
Dad. Let's go and get one because it's at 30 in the morning. Let's go for a little walk, get a little baby chino and a marshmallow. No, honey, we can't do that. But I've had one. Now I want one. Maybe I have two. Maybe a cookie as well. Maybe gingerbread man. See, there's no one-off goodwill gestures when you're negotiating with a three-year-old. They never go, I understand that was a one-off. They go, that's the new precedent. It's set in law. I will now argue for more.
You know what? I would never. You'd never want to compare children to having a dog. But we had a guy out to help us get Luna from stop her jumping on the bench like a dog whisperer. And his rule was essentially: there's no sometimes for a dog. It's always or never. They don't. You know, they can't sleep under the bed for a night and goes, all right, this is just today. This is a special treat for you today. It's just, if there's a rule, it's always the rule or it's never the rule.
That's it. And you can explain it a little bit more, I suppose, with the kids, especially once they start growing up and you can talk to them a bit more, because that is fun as they get older that you realize you can explain more detailed concepts. Mm. But the funny thing about Rudy is, you'll go, this is a sometimes food. And she'll go, okay, well, it's sometimes now. And you go, okay,
that's a good point.
to her, sometimes to us, the dictionary definition, it sometimes means on off. It sometimes occurs, it sometimes doesn't. And to Rudy, she's like, well, if it sometimes occurs, that's now.
Now's the time.
Okay.
And there was a whole night that was not the sometimes, so it can't sometimes be right now.
Yeah, but anyway, we have to go through a few times where it doesn't occur for it to meet the criteria of sometimes. No, I think we just do it now forever, and then, I don't know, some other time we'll do it not. But
you know who would be interesting to negotiate with children is if Andy ever had kids of his own, because Andy is such a, like, negotiating
kid. Runs
through his blood.
Yeah. I think he would love negotiating with kids, but I mean, honestly, what they do say sometimes, like, oh, well, you get the kid you deserve. Mm. And it would be like he would just get a hard nose, a rational negotiator, and it would be on. It would be great.
Hey, funny that you brought up work experience before, because I was talking to my cousin who is going through the year that he would have done work experience, but because of COVID and the year it is, he's not getting to do work experience and he feels like he's missing out. But I said, and tell me if this is your experience, like, work experience doesn't really teach you much about going out and working in the real world.
Mate, I was having this discussion with someone the other day. So true. Like, work experience it's vanity. It was a joke. It was like, doesn't really give you a taste of a career. Honestly, like, we get all this, you know, you'd get it too at the radio show, but like when we were together on the radio station, like every week you'd get someone going, oh, I'm interested in radio, I'm interested in TV, and that's the work experience I want to do. Like, now as a dad, right, I was having a passionate discussion about this the other day because I was like, let's be honest. You want to come and work at the radio station or the TV station because it's competition between you and your friends about who went to the coolest place.
Definitely.
It's got nothing to do with work. You're not going to come up with a new concept for a radio or TV show. You're not going to actually do the work that you would experience at a radio station. I sat down and I learned a fair bit about connecting with audiences, but finding your own voice and then bringing content to the airwaves in a way that you find interesting, but it's also engaging. And then I learned a little bit about the advertiser model. You don't learn any of that. You just sit in with the person lowest on the food chain who has to, like, put up with you.
And that's why you can tell.
And honestly, and you shouldn't have to do that because a 15-year-old isn't going to understand the ins and outs of the real work that's happening in that building or any building.
And they think of it at face value. Working at a radio station means I get to meet Guy Sebastian who's coming in for an interview.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean sitting with the sales team in the sales meeting and working on a pitch with them of how they're going to go to a client.
They are coming into the radio station going, and of course, they who would know any better, but they're coming and going, I want to do the work experience from the bits I've seen on YouTube or the billboard.
Yep.
Like, that's the thing I think I'm interested in, the bit where you seem to get paid quite a lot to laugh and muck around. Like, could I have a little slice of that? So this is what I was chatting about the other day. And also, I think there's a real, you know, there's a real socioeconomic bias, right? If I could get a little,
yep,
a little intellectual on it. The kids that come in and get to work at the fun places like TV stations and radio stations are like parents who are connected. So
definitely.
You get like kind of like well-off kids who are kind of a bit bored anyway and
yep.
who just come in and are doing it, you know. And I would have done the same thing. You do it so you can say to your mates, I worked at an advertising agency, so I could say to my mates, yeah, I'm working at this agency, at the moment, this ad agency, and yeah, it's pretty sweet. They got a cafeteria. All I talked about was like all the free food that I was allowed to have for lunch and that I could, like, I had no, had nothing to do with work, what actual
yeah.
work is.
But so you're like, right, the radio station didn't have an official work experience program. It was always just like,
nah,
oh, the
famous.
Chairman's friend's daughter
yeah.
really yeah. is passionate about media. No, she wasn't.
So, they should scrap work experience at schools, especially private schools, right? Honestly, I reckon the world would be better off if they went, hey, guys, let's be honest, you come from privileged backgrounds. Like, just the fact that you're at in this, like, nice suburb, your
yeah.
parents are well off enough to send you here. For work experience, you have to go and pick fruit. Or, like, you have to go
yeah.
and like,
do
be
real
janitors
work.
In the western suburbs or, like, dig holes, work construction. You actually have to go and because for a bunch of you, not all of you, but playing the odds, for a bunch of you, you'll probably go into uni and then you'll probably get it, you'll be get sucked into the system where you probably have, even though you'll work very hard and you'll try your best and, you know, but just because of the natural biases,
yep.
you'll end up in a position where there are people under you doing much harder work for much less money. So to understand the world a bit, you should go and do the shittiest job that you
yeah.
can and actually and earn a salary that week and go, this is what it takes to earn like $28 an hour and you have to be down this hole or pushing. You have to be like manually working and it's hard. And
totally.
It's and then go off and do whatever it is you want to do. It
but it just
be a rule
gives
that,
you
like,
some perspective
you, what,
always of like, oh, yeah, that was shit to dig holes
yeah.
or to be in the store
yeah.
and
well,
pack
that's
your
what
boxes.
People are, yeah, so things aren't so bad in my, you know, I'm so lucky to be here because I'm not saying those jobs are bad. I'm saying that it will give you perspective to be like, oh, that's what other people in the world are doing. So you should, I think there should be a thing where like whatever it is you're into, you're not allowed to do that for work experience. You have to go and do
you
something.
You have to do the opposite to what you want to do.
You have to do the opposite. You have to do the, something that's not your passion. So if you're like, I really want to be a carpenter, like that's
yeah.
what I want to do. I want to like build houses. Well, then you have to go and do something that's the opposite of that. Like you then have to find some other job somewhere to be like, well, I'm glad I'm not a data entry at an accounting firm because that
yeah.
sucks.
I reckon the only thing that my work experience gave me is that attitude of, oh, this sucks. Because I had the same as someone going into a radio station thinking it'd all be glamorous. I did my work experience at a guitar store and I thought it would be like, you know, playing on the testing out the guitars, like showing people like how the guitars sound through the amps.
Just,
I was in the back storeroom.
The scene from Wayne's World.
Yes, essentially. Like I'll be trying out the drum kits and stuff. I was in a back storeroom where for years they had never folded down the cardboard boxes that all the guitars come into, and day after day I was like folding down the boxes and like and then they would send me down this like alleyways in Fitzroy trying to find people's recycling bins to put the boxes into.
Yeah, because that's the I'm glad you got that because it's like, yeah, you know what, that's what running a small business is.
Yeah,
it's like crunching boxes. It's not wailing away on guitars.
Yeah.
Like that's 1%.
Yeah, where I thought, and then at the end of the week I thought it'd be like playing on all the guitars, and then the guy would go at the end of the week, he was like, you know what, Jack, you really had, I felt like you had a connection with that guitar, take it home. Like, really?
Yeah,
yeah,
we're making crazy money here, man. Just get out of here. Don't tell anyone. Far out. I mean, I reckon it's like I had a conversation with someone the other day in TV who we were sort of saying the same thing. It's like everyone thinks that running your own production company is like the goal. You know, you look at the big success stories like Working Dog and those guys. Like,
yeah.
to have that creative control, it's sort of like you step out and you go, no, I've got a vision and we'll execute it. And then like it's kind of like fenced off and you have that control. But in reality, like we know from radio, like a lot of running your own thing, it's not this like utopia of creative ideas. A lot of the time it's just having like legal meetings about copyright laws.
Yeah, it means you also have to do all the boring stuff.
You like have to buy the staplers.
Yeah.
You got to buy the... You gotta get the photocopier serviced. Like that's the other side of having your own production company.
I remember we did some sort of prank on the Working Dog guys, maybe for Have You Been Paying Attention or something. But it was essentially like ringing Santo Chilaro, who I grew up thinking like he's just one of the guys out the front, and he was like in the edit and having a conversation about like what needs to get taken out of the episode because of what TV shows haven't aired that week that they're talking about on Having Paying Attention. Something really menial like that. He's having that boring conversation. And all those guys are doing the same thing. It's like, there's a lot of the boring stuff behind the scenes.
Yeah. And especially in TV too, like TV, I mean, the goal is like, Have You Been Paying Attention is a great idea because like the ratio of having fun to then getting it to air is pretty good. Yeah. Like, is really good for a show because, you know, the people go on the show and they're like super funny and spontaneous and you're kind of catching that lightning in a bottle. And then there's a lot of effort to get it to that stage where people can have that playtime that, you know, for however long it takes, for like an hour. And then there's a bit more effort to kind of get it to air. But the ratio of like, you know, the behind the scenes work and the getting to have the actual fun on air is pretty good. But there's a lot of TV is tons and tons of slog work to catch one little moment, and then tons and tons and tons of slog work to kind of keep that moment preserved so it makes it to air.
Yeah.
And I think that's why, you know, for us, like we always, you know, that's what I love so much about radio is because
yeah,
the ratio is pretty good on radio, you know.
Much higher. Like amount of time having fun versus the amount of annoying bits and pieces you have to do behind the scenes is such a better ratio.
That's true. So that's what I've always loved about radio is this, that there's not enough time to get bogged down in like planning because you need to do 2 or 3 hours of content a day. So it has to be pretty fast, pretty spontaneous.
Yep.
So again, that's a reality. Like for any kids doing, you see it. We see them all the time. The kids doing work experience at the radio show. You see the look in their face. It's like, this isn't what I expected it to be. You see kids wandering around Channel 9 occasionally going, you know, or you're at a photo shoot, publicity shoot, and like, oh, you know, this is Damien. He's with the publicity department for a week. And you don't say it out loud, but you see it in his eyes. And he's like, oh, just chewing down the week here, like big deal. What do you guys take photos of yourselves to put on? And then everyone watches your show or they don't. And then, all right, I think I got it.
Yeah, totally. Do you feel like, I mean, I guess with Lego is one of the first things that you've worked on where it's not been made by your production company, so it's something you're joining. Even though I know how involved you are behind the scenes with coming up with the challenges and everything and how much you want, you're putting your spin on it as well, but does it make you feel a little more relaxed to work on something that is being done completely by another production company?
It's a great question. I mean, honestly, going into it, when Lego was still a concept, that was one of the things I was sort of nervous about. I was like, well, I usually, you know, until now, it's always been my production company, me and Andy. Like, you know, I've always had a slice of the production company that, and our other guys. So we've all got an equal quarter of our production company to be in charge of like how this goes, you know, not that we've ever used this, but I suppose there's a bit in the back of your mind going, if this is terrible, like I've got a seat at the table to go take it out. I don't want, you know, you've at least got a voice to go, I don't think we should do this. When you're coming in as just the host, you suddenly like, oh, I'm really just there to do a job. Like I'm a gun for hire. Like very, very broad terms, I'm a gun for hire. But then going into Lego and just getting to work with a great team in there, and they really are a super fun, creative team, the production company that makes Lego. And now, you know, we are all sort of one big family going into season 3. Get to do all the fun stuff that we talk about, like inventing the challenges and coming up with the weird silly stuff we're going to do on the show, and that the energy around that is always very positive and exciting. And but then also getting to go home and not be responsible for any of the production side of things.
Yeah, like you don't have to write the scripts for the promos or like...
Oh, yeah. I mean, you just don't have to. And look, I probably take a slight backseat on that stuff anyway. Like, you know, Andy's one of Ando's big superpowers with Radio Karate and our production company is he's very good at staying across the edits and the flows and stuff like that.
Yeah, he's over everything.
By far takes the lion's share of that stuff, which I'm super grateful for. But there's still a part of you going, well, you know, we were part of the team that had to step up and do that. But there is no, I love in Lego, in a weird way, it's like my role's more defined at Lego because I'm like, you're the host, you're the guy that thinks of some of the stuff we do on screen, then you do it and then you're done.
Yep.
And I remember like in the last season, there was an episode we did where it was people had to build underwater or we had to build something and we were going to sink it into a big tank.
Yep.
And that underwater episode, we knew was coming up. I remember there was one day where it was like still a few eps away, but I passed like a huddle. Like we'd finished filming for the day and it was kind of like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock at night. And I was leaving and there was like a huddle of the executive producer and a few of the other producers working something out. And I was like, oh, what's going on, guys? What are you up to? And like, we're just trying to figure out how to get this tank for the underwater episode because there was talk for a second they were going to shoot it offside at the aquarium and then that wasn't working. And they're like, where do we get a tank from? They're like, they're just not a common thing, a giant, clear-sided, like million-litre tank of water. And then someone was like, we think we found one in Queensland, but we're just trying to figure out the logistics of shipping it down and getting it here in time and how do we get it in the studio? Is it too big? You know, there was a lot of stuff going on. It was 6 o'clock at night. And I just had this moment of going, this flash of going, if this was my production company, I would be in this meeting. And we'd be figuring this out. And then I just sort of was like, but I'm standing up, got my backpack on. Like, well, let us know how it goes, guys. We got the best team in the biz on it. And I just strolled off and I was like, and that is the fun of not being the production company.
I remember you guys were making a true story episode where, now, don't get me wrong that you actually made this one, but the one with the elephant and you would have to get a, like...
Yes. Yeah. We didn't know. We could never make it.
Yeah, that's right. So it was a great story, except, the logistics of getting and filming with a real elephant who had to, like, walk down a main street of a town and stuff was just impossible.
Yeah. It was. And that becomes... And that's the other thing about TV or about so much stuff is, you know, only a certain... It's like... baby turtles, only a certain amount of ideas make it in the wild. And you have to hatch lots. Like you have to hatch lots and lots of ideas because you know that for one reason or another, there's just going to be eventually, and you give it your all and you give it a lot of effort to try and get things happening, but you know there will just be some that don't make it and they just don't get down to the water and a seagull eats them and there's just nothing you can do about it. So you got to hatch a lot of ideas and... So it's that I like that process, but it's
I think it's the opposite to radio where you're not getting points for all of that hard work. Whereas if you were doing the same thing on radio, say you could spend a couple of weeks talking each day about how we're going to get a life size elephant, who knows any circuses, and you're making content out of all that stuff. Whereas to get an elephant on screen for True Story, no one knows that you guys are doing all that work. All you get judged on like the jokes you tell sitting in the seat across from them.
Exactly. You just get judged on the turtles that make it to the water, not how many hatched.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of the game on TV. That's the cost of doing it because no turtles would make it to the water if only one hatched.
So that's a great metaphor.
You have to hatch them all, but that's just kind of the natural part of it. But I agree with you for radio too, like, that's the joy of radio is, you're right. You get a lot of content out of failure.
Yeah.
Which is great. And it's kind of like, I don't know, it's probably been the stuff that we've all gravitated towards over the years where you're like, well, let's try and think of things where it still is fun and funny if it doesn't go to plan. Like I think you're always in a bit of a precarious situation where you've thought of an idea that is only good if everything works out perfectly.
Definitely.
Because I think we just know like alarm bells would ring immediately because nothing ever works out perfectly.
Yeah. And it's just not as fun. Like the journey is the best part. Like take something like Andy by Hamish, the fragrance. If you're doing that on TV and like, you know, all right, the fragrance has been made already, you lose all the fun of like negotiating with the distributor and like what scent are they going to choose, and the scent's coming over from France, and you know, we were going down to the factory to see them bottle the fragrance. You just lose all that and you've only got the final product.
So true. It's so true. It's kind of like, I'm going to use a surfing analogy here from someone that doesn't surf.
Great.
But I like, it's kind of like what I imagine the thrill of surfing to be. It's that thing of like, you're out in the water and you know, something like Andy by Hamish, you know, you and me got to have so much fun with that because it kind of was done at Andy. Like the whole point was he didn't consent.
Yeah.
But we had that fun of just sitting in the water and, you know, a wave would come along and it was just that moment of going, yes, let's go for this one. And then you paddle, 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 and then you're on it and you get to make a bunch of decisions on the wave. And you feel like the whole fun, I imagine, of surfing is being on the wave and being like there being no lag between what's about to happen and what is happening. You know what I mean? Like you're right on that kind of yep. magical cusp where the ocean's pushing you along and you can feel
love
it.
Love that. And I'm a non-surfer again, as well.
But again, I imagine that's the fun of surfing. That's why I would be interested in trying one day. But that's probably like, that's how it feels on radio when you're doing a good idea and you can feel that you're just being pushed along. You're right in that magic balance. You're not too far ahead of it. You're not too far behind it. You just right in that magic point where it's alive and you're running with it.
Yeah.
And so, yes, any time that you like, well, secretly this has to meet X, this preconceived outcome that, you know, that is miles away, you don't get to feel any of that fun.
Yep. Cool. For a while there, I thought part of the analogy was going to be the bobbing up and down in the water while you're waiting for a wave is still valuable and that's all part of surfing. So even
great
when you're not on the
analogy.
Wave. Yeah.
Great part of the energy because you're out there with your friends.
Yeah,
you're hanging out. I see the surfers doing it all the time. I think I'm maybe referencing the up and go out a little bit here, but it's or is it a is it a sausage ad?
Something where he puts
where he drinks it and he then he like then he puts the rubbish in his wetsuit and like catches a wave. Is that up and go?
I think that might be up and go. Yeah. Yeah. Or sustenance.
So that seems like fun. Yeah, some sort of Prima-based adult protein / energy drink. So like a milky sports drink. So that seems like fun, hanging out in the waves, chatting to your buds, having an up and go. And then you know, the idea comes like, although I guess the difference with radio is you all jump on the wave. And from what I understand about surfing is,
yeah.
You know, it's really one person's wave.
Yep. What's it called? I feel like
you don't want to cut in.
You don't want to cut in on someone else's wave.
You don't want to cut in. Yeah.
See, like if I went surfing, I would just be terrified about rules like that. Yeah. And I feel like,
well, you and I could go on a tandem board. So we were like, you know what? We come from a radio background. The whole reason we're out here surfing is like, we're pretty sure we understand the ethos because we've worked in radio. So, yeah, when the right wave comes along, like, we're catching it together.
And I'm sure surfing podcasts, if they're out there, you know, they're speaking to Mick Fanning or somebody and he's using radio as an analogy for what it's like to catch a wave.
Yeah. Punching that shark was sort of like when you're making a prank call and it's not going right.
All right, hey, we've gone over time, man. Thank you for sticking around for so long and thanks for being on the podcast.
Oh, man. I love it. And I got to say, man, I really love this podcast. I think it's great. And you know what I love most about Jackie Road? Do you feel this? It's rare for you. Mm. I mean, you've always enjoyed, like even the Yamaha raffle where you're like, all right, everyone keep track of what you're doing. I can't be bothered keeping track of it.
Yeah.
I know that your ideas are always, I think, world class. Your comedy is world class. But the thing, part of the reason I kind of love you as well as a person is like, sometimes you're like, nah, I can't really be bothered doing something that seems a bit difficult, which is part of the charm. But
thank
I'm
you.
Like, this is difficult doing the song every week and committing to it and the effort you put into it, and you're really doing it. Like,
you're
really doing the hard thing.
To be fair, I've been for about a month or 2 months. It's now I'm approaching it like a marathon, and I, because I, so I'm going to do the series for 12 songs, right? And when I get to 12 songs, yep, release an album and put the series to bed. So now I just couldn't do it ongoing, impossible. So now it's just like, all right, I just one foot after the other, keep going, okay, keep making those songs.
So you have reduced the long term. I wondered when this would be coming. There's some level of effort reduction. But I will. I do.
No, but honestly, it's so hard. And for whatever reason, I set the bar too high with the.
I was trying to give you a compliment going. Normally, I know he's the kind of guy that goes, you know what, actually, this has got too hard. And I'm, but you know, you didn't do it this time. You're doing the hard thing. And then the
you're
next
really growing up. You're
honestly, honestly, this is so hard. I can't do it.
No, the production level of the songs, I've gone in too hard. And now I just feel like I got to keep meeting that every week. And
But you're doing it. I think you still deserve the praise because I think there's a lot of people that would have just quietly stopped at three and gone, yeah, it was a short season. Yeah. Because there's no rules in podcast. I think you could have stopped at three or four and gone, I was always going to do four, and no one would question it.
The podcasts I've done, which you've been a part of some, going back to the very first one, which was a movie podcast where we sat down in your production studios and watched a movie, and for the hour and a half we would do like an audio commentary on Home Alone. That only made three episodes. Then my Essendon Football Club podcast, that was four episodes. and then I also did a science-based podcast with my friend who is a scientist, Jack and Matt Maker Science Club.
Yeah, that's right.
And that lasted six episodes. So this going into, I think this might be episode 20, is far and away the most I've put into my own podcast.
Well, as a mate and an objective fan, I've noticed the effort.
Thank you.
I'm impressed. But it's worth it too. Like, you know, this is not a normal podcast. Like, it has far more effort per second. Most podcasts are just general ramblings. And so you've got effort in it, which I think elevates it. It should actually be a whole other chart on the podcast. It should be two podcast charts.
Actually really
like
trying.
Just general ramblings, and that's like 98% of podcasts, some additional effort has been applied to this podcast, and you're on the second chart.
You know where I've done myself a disservice, though, is like the thing that's taking me all the time and that is worth all the effort, it's 95% of what I put in to the podcast goes at the last 3 minutes of the episode. So it's traditionally probably the least heard bit of the podcast.
But it's all right. You're doing it for you. You're doing it for you because you've got these songs inside you. They need to come out.
Thank you, man. And good news is, and I haven't really said much about it, and I'll just use it as a teaser, but there will be a phase two of the podcast that isn't reliant on doing the songs every week and going to burn me out, but there will be a phase two of the podcast. believe me, Jackie, mark my word.
Jackie Road, foot off the pedal, baby.
I've tried my hand at the full effort episodes. Now I'm going to go to the general ramblings category.
I was honored to be on whilst it still warranted the effort.
Thanks, man. Thanks for doing this.
Awesome fun. Thanks, mate.
Bye-bye. It's Hamish Blake in Jackie Road Studios. Jackie Road Studios, phase one. There will be a phase two. I haven't really decided what phase two is yet. I just wanted to seed the idea of it so that when we get to the end of the songs and the album, like if I get to 11 songs, 12 songs, hey, I might even get to 14 songs. You don't know. Nimrod, one of my favorite all-time albums, had 18 songs on it. I might get on a roll and push out 18 songs. I'm at least going to get past 10. That's the promise I made to myself for this album. And then I will move into phase two of Jackie Road Studios, which won't be as heavily reliant on pushing out songs every fortnight and to make an album. And I don't really know what else it is yet, but trust me, we're all working very hard behind the scenes here at Jackie Road Studios. Full time, overtime, lots of late nights, tires getting loosened, ordering in Chinese for dinner, smashing our heads together thinking what's the perfect format for phase two of the podcast, Jackie Road Studios. Leave it to us, guys. We'll get it done. We'll get it sorted. Then we tell you what it is.
Yeah.
JackieRoadStudios@gmail.com is where you can send me an email. That's how you get involved with the talking points.
Talking points, oh, what are you talking points?
Two ways you can get involved with the show this week through the talking points. And remember, if you get your email read out on the show, you go into the draw to win a Yamaha guitar. Even if you play guitar or not, still cool to have, right? You can put it up on your wall if you don't play it. Just keep it in the corner of your room so people think like, oh, cool, this person plays guitar. You never actually have to pick it up. It's a sick guitar, the Yamaha RS720B. The first way to get involved this week is homemade gifts. I'm going to put up a photo or a few photos of the NoFX jumper that Hamish made me several years ago for Kris Kringle. I kind of had forgotten about it. I kept it. I would never throw away such a magical gift that has had painstaking hours gone into making it. But I can't quite remember where it is right now. I don't know why I looked around the room like, oh, yeah. Oh, there it is. Yeah, it's just been hanging on a coat hanger behind me for the last 6 years. The NoFX jumper, which Hamish handmade for Kris Kringle. Tell me about any homemade gifts, really shit or really good, that you have made, whether it's for Kris Kringle or Christmas in general or for someone's birthday. Maybe you were strapped for cash. Maybe you're trying to go above and beyond. Was it a great success, like maybe Hamish thinks the NoFX jumper was, or was it something that the person really didn't want to receive? Like, I can't think of an example for this scenario, but there might be examples where people got a homemade jumper and didn't like it and never wore it again. What are your homemade gifts?
Talking points, oh, what are you talking points?
The other one that lit up my group chat with my friends this weekend was our work experience. So I spoke a little bit about going to the guitar shop and just being in the back room for the whole week, stacking boxes, well, breaking down cardboard boxes and flattening them. So I asked my friends who I went to high school with, like, guys, do you remember what your work experience was? Got so many good stories back. Particularly one story, which I'll get to, which is this week's song. But the second talking point for this week is, what did you do for work experience? We did it at our school in year 10, so I guess you're like 15, 14, 15, 16 years old. What did you do for work experience? What was the expectation you had, and what was the reality?
Talking points, oh, what are you talking points?
JackieRoadStudios@gmail.com is where you send me an email for those. And this week's song is to do with work experience. So one of my friends, I don't know how much to say here because it's revealed in the song. Just one of my friends reminded me of his work experience and how terrible it was. He left it to the last minute to get it. I think that's as much information as I'll give for this week. So thank you guys for joining me on Jackie Road Studios. If you liked this week's episode or any of the episodes of the podcast and you think you know somebody who would enjoy this podcast, please let them know that I'm here at Jackie Road Studios. And I'll leave you with this week's song. Because Hamish mentioned in the interview the NoFX jumper, I thought I would make this a really NoFX inspired song. I talk about them a lot on the podcast. They're one of my favorite bands, and if you know them, you'll definitely hear the influence in this song. It's called The Work Experience Song. This is Jackie Road Studios.
Vernon, I remembering year 10. Work experience week was then, but Jackson showed indifference when finding work experience. We had to get our own placement, but Jackson was too complacent, and so he ended up at Coles.
she calls full time, 2 weeks, no pay. Worst experience, work experience. His manager was younger than him, and she went to our school. And Coles must have been licking their lips, thinking how sweet it is. Practically free labour, you only have to pay the work experience, kids, travel expenses.